am the Organic Outreach Coordinator, University of Minnesota. And before I start, a little background. I worked as an organic inspector for 20 years and trained inspectors and served on the USDA National Organic Standards Board for a five-year term. And first, I just want to ask, how many of you are currently conducting organic research? So quite a few. And how many of you are certified? Less, but still a good number. At the University of Minnesota, we've had 120 acres certified organic since the early 90s. We now have several other sites and additional land that's in transition to organic. And I did bring a few resources up. I'll mention when I before I close, if I have time. I always like to read the definition of organic production because some people still think that there's 100 different definitions. Well, no, there is one codified definition in the Federal Register, and this is it, that organic production is a production system, and that's a key word, a systems approach, managed to respond to site-specific conditions by integrating cultural, biological, mechanical practices that foster the cycling of resources, promote ecological balance, and conserve biodiversity. And I think as researchers, it's really important to keep that overall picture and definition in mind as you design your experiments, that they are a systems approach, and we certainly need to be doing more to research and promote that last phrase there, conserving biodiversity and promoting ecological balance. Now, who must be certified? And I'll just briefly go through this. Basically, anyone selling over $5,000 a year of organic products. Retailers don't have to be certified, and then warehouses, things like that. But everybody else in the supply chain has to be certified. And that's by a USDA accredited certification agency. And there's a complete list of those at the NOP website, National Organic Program website, there at the bottom of the screen. And you can choose whatever agency you want as a research institution. But they're all technically equal. And this is just a flow chart walking through the certification process. Of course, you have to complete that transition prior to being eligible for certification, 36 months, no prohibited materials, before you're even eligible to qualify. And during that time, you set up the record-keeping system, and that's critical. So it's not just records of your research, but also records to fulfill the organic requirements, which oftentimes will go beyond what you need for your particular part of the research. And then completing an organic system plan. And just because you're a research institution doesn't mean you don't have to pay the fees. You still have to pay those, but you can qualify for certification reimbursement, cost share program through either your state government or USDA administered by your state government. You have to get inspected at least annually. Then the agency is the one that makes that decision. The inspector doesn't come out and say you're approved. They just gather all the information and submit a report. The agency makes that final decision. That organic system plan, you have to describe everything you're going to do, everything you're going to use, not just what you're currently doing, but what you plan to do, and describe the proactive strategies for building soil, preventing pest problems, land history, field maps, all of that. You have to follow that plan, so it needs to be accurate, and you have to follow the standards themselves. And you can only use approved substances. I won't get into that, but there is a national list of approved materials. And then, like I said, be inspected at least annually. Now, what are some of the benefits and challenges of certification for a research station or a facility? Well, these days, access to funds is a big one. So the Federal Integrated Organic Program requires that the research be conducted either on certified land or land that's in transition to organic certification. And the same is true for much of the private funds these days. So it certainly helps with your access to funds. But the credibility of the results really go up with if farmers, especially organic farmers, know that you're playing by the same rules, that you are operating a truly organic research program, not one that just cuts out the inputs and is what we call organic by neglect, which is not certifiable. So the credibility with the other researchers and with funders. The marketability of the products, and this is often overlooked, but if you want to do real-time economic analysis of the research, in addition to just looking at the agronomic side, being certified, you can then market those products as organic. Without certification, you cannot. So it opens up doors there. And you, by doing certified research, you're educating others within your institution, other faculty, staff, about the organic requirements, students that are part of the program, but also farmers that attend field days, workshops, things like that, on what the standards are and the certification process. There's no better way to teach than to do it first and learn through firsthand experience what some of the challenges and pitfalls of certification are and what the standards really mean at the farm level. Marketability of your program, not just this particular research project, but more and more students are looking for universities that have certified organic research programs. So that's certainly another thing to look at. And this is a quality system. Organic certification really is a quality system similar to HACCP or other quality systems out there. So you're required to document your activities. You're required to have discipline and work together as a team in this. I'm sorry about the volume if you hear this little whooshing sound. I didn't realize when I set up this show. But also by having that inspector come to your research site, having the certifier review, you've got another set of eyes looking over your research. External evaluation that unless you have a stakeholder team of farmers, you don't otherwise have. And even if you have farmers, they may not know the standards and procedures like that inspector who comes there. And yeah, it makes everybody nervous when the inspector's going to come, but see that as a bright day, a day when you're getting what you pay for, which is an external evaluation of your project by someone who's totally neutral, objective, and has no dog in the fight. I mentioned about it being a quality system. Well, it forces everyone involved to communicate, work together on really mundane things like making sure equipment's cleaned out prior to use on the organic land, that that there's not drift from neighboring conventional fields, that crops are segregated during harvest and in post-harvest handling and storage. So it's an excellent opportunity for building teamwork on the site. And also to take that a step further, multidisciplinary, so that the crops you're growing can then go into the food science department to look at the nutritional aspects of them, for instance, or use them then for animal feed for the animal science department or veterinary medicine that are doing organic livestock research. So it's truly an integrated approach that you're opening up opportunities by certifying the crop research, for instance. Now, the organic regulations has the opportunity for temporary variances for research. And so that last phrase, practices used for the purposes of conducting research trials. And to get a temporary variance means you can do a few things that an organic farmer wouldn't get away with. You're still certified organic, but it's a temporary variance for the purpose of research. You have to request that variance of your certifying agent. They have to get permission from USDA, who then can grant that variance and grant an extension if you request and need that. Some things that are not allowed under a temporary variance: any use of a non-approved substance, that doesn't qualify. So you can't try some kind of seed treatment or spray that's not allowed. Any prohibited natural substance you cannot use. Excluded methods, well, those are code words for genetic engineering. So no use of any genetically engineered crop, bacteria, etc. No use of ionizing radiation or no use of sewage sludge, even in compost that you might use on an organic research site. And there is a definition, I'm not going to read through that, but of excluded methods. I do encourage you to read that so you know what is allowed under genetic engineering and what's not. There's not any DNA transgenics that's allowed, but things such as traditional breeding, conjugation, fermentation, hybridization, in vitro fertilization, or tissue culture are allowed. Those are not considered excluded methods or genetic engineering. So things that can be considered for a temporary variance would be things under the crop fertility standard, the seed and planting stock requirements. You can deviate from the crop rotation requirements. The livestock section is quite open for negotiation. Some of the handling requirements, but you still have to keep records. You still have to maintain the natural resources of the operation, complete an organic plan, and as I said, no use of prohibited substances. You have to complete the same transition. You have to have buffer zones and boundaries, but there could be flexibility on the size of those buffers if you can document no commingling and no contamination from the comparative conventional trials. If you're selling your crops, you still have to meet the same labeling requirements and you still have to follow the same certification procedures. So here's a few resources. I had the USDA website, encourage you to visit that. And at the bottom of the page, I'm not going to go through what all those others are. They're on the ASA site in my talk here, but I do encourage you to visit the University of Minnesota's Organic Ecology website, where my full paper is posted. It has a lot more details than I was ever able to cover today. And I do have one copy of that if someone wants a printed copy. There's my email address. I did bring a few other things that are available. One is Minnesota Guide to Organic Certification, which is a university publication I co-authored out just this year. I have a few copies of that, as well as the some brochures about our organic ecology program. I'll just close by letting you know that the National Organic Standards Board currently has a draft recommendation on temporary variances open for public comment. So if you go to that USDA NOP website, you can view that. I encourage you to read through that because it may affect your life. Thank you.